This call is now being recorded.
Thank you very much. This is Julie Hedlund, and I want to welcome everybody to the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group teleconference call. Today is Monday, June 7th at 1400 UTC. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On the call, we have Edmund Chung, one of our co-chairs. We have Bob Hutchinson, Zhang Kong Yao, and Rafiq Damik. And we have apologies from Ram Mohan and Jim Galvin. And Jeremy Hitchcock has indicated that he will join us a little bit late. From staff, we have Steve Sheng, Glenn de Saint-Jury, and Julie Hedlund. So I'd like to welcome everyone, and perhaps Edmund, I had a thought to maybe summarize a little bit of the discussion from the last call for those who might not have been on the call, and then perhaps we could discuss the possible preliminary approach that Steve Sheng sent around to the list and maybe go through that in some detail on this call. Would that be a good way to start, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's great.
Great, thanks. Everyone, on the last call, we had a discussion about the various models, there being now four models, and we talked about the possibility of pulling out what we thought were sort of the best possible approaches from the four models, and then also going back through the discussion from previous meetings to try to identify approaches to displaying various elements of international elements of who is data, and try to put together a possible preliminary approach. And just to let everyone know, we also talked about having a brief presentation to be able to provide at the ICANN meeting at Brussels. We do have a public session scheduled for Thursday, the 24th, from 9:30 to 11, and that session is split. Part of the time will be with the Who is Service Requirements initial report, and then also a session particularly on the work of the IRDWG and perhaps a discussion around a possible preliminary approach. We're not really calling it a set of recommendations because I think that many work group members felt that we weren't really having a consensus yet around a particular approach, but that maybe this could form the basis for a discussion. Following last week's call, we staff put together a suggested possible preliminary approach and sent it around to the list for discussion, and then also on this call as well. And Jim Galvin, who unfortunately can't be on the call today, did ask whether or not we wanted to present information concerning the four models themselves, and I think that's a question we could consider on today's call. And I want to welcome Aubrey Doria, who I see has joined the call. Welcome,
hi.
Aubrey.
Hello.
And I see that Jeremy Hitchcock also has joined. Welcome, Jeremy.
Hello. How's everyone doing?
Good, thanks. On the call, Jeremy, we have Edmund Chung, Aubrey Doria, Bob Hutchinson, Zhang Kong Yao, and Rafiq Damik. And from staff, we have Steve Sheng, Glenn de Saint-Jury, and myself. And just to bring you up to date, I just gave a little bit of background on the discussion on our last call and then suggested that perhaps we could use this call to discuss this possible preliminary approach that Steve Sheng has sent around sort of as a suggested starting point and that might form the basis for a brief presentation for our public session, which is scheduled for Thursday in Brussels. And then there's also a brief update to the council, which I think is scheduled on the Saturday, on the weekend before. Also,
Julie, sorry, this is Glenn. It's actually Sunday.
No How is it, Sunday? Thank you. I keep giving the wrong information, but I knew you should know, and I should have just asked you.
It's
Thank you very
Sunday
much.
From 5 p.m. to 6 p.m.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Glenn.
Thank you.
So at any rate, Jeremy and Edmund, if you'd like, perhaps I could ask Steve Sheng what I was going to mention too, Jeremy, was that Jim Galvin had just sent to the list this morning a question as to whether or not we wanted to present information on the four models that we've been discussing also in our discussion at Brussels, and I think that's something we can talk about today as well. So with your permission, perhaps I could turn it over to Steve Sheng and ask him to go through this suggested approach that he sent around and the comments he's received on it so far, if any, and I'm not sure that there were any comments.
This is Jeremy. That'd be good with me.
Great. Thanks. Steve, would you like to go through?
Sure.
Thank you.
So about 2 weeks ago, I sent out an email outlining kind of summarizing the discussion in the working group. And I have received, I think, one comment from Adrian, basically saying we need pictures, we need examples. So that's the only comment. And the other comment is from Jim, saying that we want to enumerate all the four models and discuss them in depth. Those are the comments I have received. Do you want me to go through? How should we do this, Julie? Do you want me to go through like one by one and discuss, or what do you want me to do? Julie?
This is Jeremy. Why don't you quickly go through the models, maybe find out if the orientation of trying to display the four models during the time in Brussels would be the approach that the working group wants to do to gauge some input from the community.
Right. Okay, I can do that. So the four models really pertains to the entity names. So these are the name of the registrant, the admin contact, the technical contact, and their postal address. So the four models really only apply here. And for others, for example, the domain name, the name server, the sponsor and registrar, telephone, fax number, email address, dates, registration status, those are separate. The four models does not apply there. Now, the four models are, the first model is really registrants submit must be present or language to who is. So that's very much like they are today. They have to submit in English. And then also given an option for registrants to submit in their local language as well. That's model one. And the model two is the registrants have the option to submit so that the registrants can submit their registration information in local script. And the registrars can either provide a point of contact if issues of language arise, or they could transliterate on behalf of the registrant. So those are model two and model three. And the last model is really registrars provide a backward compatibility for port 43 WHOIS. So here, you know, we didn't specify how registrars do that, and they are at their own leisure to come up with their solutions. So those roughly are the summary of the four models.
Okay.
This is Jeremy. Sorry, Julie, do you want to go ahead?
No, I was just going to ask if there were any questions for Steve. But go ahead. That was Jeremy, was it?
Yeah, I was going to say, Steve, do you want to summarize the topics that have not received much discussion, where maybe we could do a couple, I don't know, looking at the items, I'm not sure we'll come to kind of some, there might be some fruitful discussion that we could have just to tie up a couple of loose ends before leading into Brussels.
Sure. There are a couple of, so the key issue here, one of the key issues, there are several key issues. So one of the key issues that we have not discussed is, for example, we set a requirement basically saying that Whois client, the Whois portfolio 3 must continue to work in the IDN environment so that, you know, they must be able to accept like a U-label query and then display the appropriate U-label and A-label. We kind of, not kind of, at the early on, we kind of set a requirement saying, you know, that still needs to be the case. But we have not discussed or highlighted, there are inherent technical challenges in the Whois protocol to do that. So, like, the current Whois protocol cannot, you know, accommodate what we required. So I think one thing the working group could do is call attention to this issue. I'm not sure if this working group is the right place to address these technical concerns, but definitely we can call attention to this issue and maybe asking IETF or ICANN to come up with something. So that's the first important issue that we have, you know, yet to put it on the table. Another issue that we've discussed, we've agreed that we can internationalize these, we can separate these, the Whois records into different fields and internationalize them separately. So we have discussed domain names, that's perfectly fine. We have not discussed about name server names. So currently most of the name server names are in US ASCII. But, you know, with internationalized domain names, it could be potentially that, you know, someone want to provide an IDN version of the name server names. It's a possibility. I think it's a, you know, there's a, so we have to decide what do we do, what do we require there. So that's that. We talk about sponsoring registrar, telephone number, email address. One thing we have not discussed is, do we want to internationalize the registration status? For example, you know, the client hold, delete, prohibited, update, prohibited. What do we do with those? Do those stay in U.S. ASCII? You know, we have to, kind of talk about that a little bit. So that's about it. So in summary, the technical challenges for Whois in accommodating IDN and then internationalizing name server names and also registration status. So those are the three things I think are loose ends we need to tie up.
Steve, this is Julie. What about dates? That
date.
Is integration,
yes.
Date, expiration date, and update date of the domain.
Yes, date. Sorry. Thanks for the catch. I didn't miss that. The dates. You know, do we want to, you know, put the dates in a format that is, kind of the UTC format like the EPP uses? So those are the things. I think, those are my kind of personal opinion too. I think the working group can comment on. What does the working group think?
Steve, could you give us some guidance on the internationalization of the dates? This is the first I've heard of this, and I don't really understand what internationalization means relative to the dates.
Right. The dates are mostly, so for example, when I kind of summarize what the working group discussed, I basically take out the RAA and go item by item, you know, each field in the RAA that requests, and ask the question, you know, what does internationalizing this field mean? The dates is essentially right now, you know, there are various date formats. You know, around the world, the U.S. use the dates in certain format. You know, Europe use the date in a certain format. And you know, so is Asia. So, for example, June 12th in U.S. will be 06-12. You know, so that, so you put the month first, and then you put the date. In other countries, you do that reverse. So you put the month first. You put 12 first, and then you put 6 second. So sometimes it could be ambiguous. Is it, you know, June 12th or is it December 6th? So those,
mm-hmm.
you know, what I mean by internationalization is, you know, something kind of, you know, in a unambiguous way to present it. So that's what I mean.
Isn't that a current issue in who is and not? It means it's not particularly germane to the internationalization discussion, other than historically. Is there no precedent in the registration agreement as to how to represent dates? Is that what you're saying in RAA 3.3.145?
I mean, the RA does not specify anything other than, you know, what is to be displayed. You know, so for example, telephone number, you know. I mean,
but it doesn't indicate the form, right?
Yes, interface.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So that's the second issue. I think last issue I almost forgot is another issue is, do we want to recommend standardizing the label? That I'm not sure whether, you know, it's in the remit, within the remit of this working group. But those are the issues of.
Right.
So, Steve, this is Julie. Should we, I guess, first question is, what do the work group members think? I mean, if we take these one by one, do we think that we would recommend a particular format for the display of the, for instance, a more, you know, an international format would probably be date and then month?
This is Steve. I have the summary. Maybe we can go over the preliminary approach one item by item, and I see whether we have, you know, what does the working group think? You know, this is what I summarized. But I want to make sure that this is what the working group wants as the outcome for this group.
Mrs. Aubrey, can I ask a question and possibly make a point?
Go ahead.
On these things, I'm not quite clear on all of them, whether a change to the RAA or just a clarification to the RAA might be something that would eventually be needed / recommended. And that's perhaps one thing that can be answered. The other thing, and I'm not even sure we know the answer to that at the moment, the other thing I just wanted to point out, that on a parallel track, the there has just been a group that's just finished its work within the GNSO itself looking at changes that are needed or possibly needed. Let me back off, that are needed. Changes that might be desirable to the RAA that will be discussed in some fashion or other yet to be agreed on. That report will be going out for review soon, and so we may find it useful as part of the comment period to raise the flag and say, in addition to all these rights and responsibility type issues that you're talking about with the RAA, there may be some other clarification/changes that can, ought, maybe, should be, have I qualified that enough, considering.
This is Julie. Thank you, Aubrey. That was very helpful. I think that's something that perhaps the work group could consider, as a way to provide some comments, public comment period on the report when it comes out. I would go back to what Steve was asking. Perhaps we could go through each of the items in the preliminary approach. Before we do that, I'm not sure that we have answered Jeremy's question, and that is that Steve had summarized each of the models very briefly. Do the work group members think that such a summary would be useful to present in Brussels to give a little bit of background on the discussion that the work group has been going through for many weeks now? To summarize each of the models and include that? Jeremy, do you think that would be useful? Edmund?
Maybe. If there isn't an overwhelming desire for it, then maybe not. I mean, it sounds like we've spent definitely a couple calls on it, and I think that just in the preparation for presentation information, sounds like one meta-issue that the models really came out of was from saying that we want the current existing WHOIS service to be IDN supportive, and that means a bunch of different things. And so I guess the question then is the presentation of different models and coming down to pros and cons of each one, and we can either talk about that on this call I think everyone had been on at least one of the calls where we were discussing the four different models, and I guess it'd be up to the other work group members whether or not it'd be useful to kind of go through them, to review them again and decide whether or not it's worth discussing or just diving in and discussing them further.
Thank you, Jeremy. This is Julie. I think what I was asking might be slightly different. Not so much a discussion of the models here, but whether or not as background in the presentation that we prepare for Brussels that there could be perhaps a slide or two that just says, what were the models that the working group was discussing, and then just present, that there was discussion on these and that then, the work group moved towards, a possible preliminary approach, pulling elements out of the four models to create one approach, and it's to addressing, since that's just one piece of the approach the presentation of the entity name and contact information, but for just the purpose of providing background. I'm not sure if I'm being clear. Sorry.
No, you are. My apologies, Jeremy.
This is Edmund, and the intended audience is not just the people who've been participating in this group as well. It's a broader community, right?
Edmund, this is Julie. That's correct. This would be a public session, and so we can assume that people attending, some of them may not have any background at all. So I think in that respect, we would certainly at the very least include on the slide a description of what the working group is and why it was formed and, you know, what, you know, in general it's been discussing, which is a little bit of what we included in that presentation we gave for the council in Nairobi. But then we could go into some background on the four models and then into the preliminary approach, if that seems
Julie, and I've sent a few slides, basically, you know, some essentially the same as Julie's email, but I include some background, two background slides on the IRD. So if you have it, maybe we can discuss.
In that case, I think it makes sense. I don't know, Jeremy, if you agree to, given the context of which I think it makes sense to present it as Julie suggested.
This is Jeremy. Yeah, that makes sense. I was thinking of this call, not during Brussels.
Oh. Cool.
It would make a lot of sense to go through the models and kind of the how we came about to the genesis of discussing the four different methods for kind of paths that this working group may go.
This is Julie. Thanks. That's very helpful guidance. And I think that's probably what Jim Galvin was suggesting as well, is that it might be useful to provide the background, kind of summarizing each of the models, since some people wouldn't be familiar. I see that Steve Shang did send around to this group some slides, possible slides for our discussion.
I just made it this morning, sorry.
Well, that's okay, because actually I wasn't anticipating necessarily that you would have to do this until after morning's call, because I think that we do need to talk about each of the items in this preliminary approach,
and perhaps we can
start by doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I essentially copy, you know, that email and make it a couple of slides. But what I did here is I did some markup screenshots, so maybe that would be helpful, easier to participants who are new to this area to understand. So that's the value of the slides, as I see. I mean, otherwise, it's essentially the same as the email.
I see. And I see that you've, and thank you also, Steve, I see that you've got the screenshots in there, which perhaps would be answering one of the concerns that you mentioned in the comments that we received, that it would be useful to have examples, you know, so that we can understand what we're talking about, you know, how the information actually looks.
Yeah.
So I think that's useful. Well, why don't we go ahead and look at each of the items then here as a group that we've suggested. Would you like to go through them each
sure.
one?
Sure, I can do that. Or did all of you receive the presentation in email?
No, this is Steve.
No,
I haven't gotten it.
I didn't receive it either. Steve, this is Bob Hutchinson.
Let me go ahead and forward it to the, I think you sent it, I don't know if you sent it to the work group or just to selected people, Steve, but let me forward it to
the couple of people who are on the call already.
All right, let me go ahead and forward it to the full working group, because Steve Metallitz, Steve, welcome, has recently joined us, so I don't think he got that as well.
No, I haven't got it.
Why don't you go ahead and just go through the first of the possible approaches?
So the first question is, what should we require of the WHOIS service in the IDA environment? And those are the summaries we had earlier, that the WHOIS clients must be able to accept a user query in either U or A label format. A WHOIS client must be able to display results of queries in both U and A label. And third, bundled representations of a single A or U label query should be returned. Now, do we have any issues with that requirement or any thoughts?
I should note, this is Julie, I should note that this is one we discussed fairly early on, and I think there was a certain amount of consensus, if I'm remembering correctly, that this was an acceptable approach. Steve, would that be correct?
Yeah, I think so, but I want to make sure if we have, because not all of us are on the call on the same time, so.
So to be clear here, U-label and A-label means that within the domain name, Puni code is representation for the U-label portion, right?
Right.
Okay. I guess I've Googled U-label and A-label, and I don't find proper definitions of U-label and A-label for people.
Okay.
Excuse me, I was confused by the answer. Did you say the U-label was the Puni code?
Let me clarify.
I thought
the U-label is in the localized language, and the A-label is the translated ASCII for the U-label.
So the A-label would be the Puni code, correct?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, the A-label will be the Puni code. The U-label will be the localized.
Forgive me for butting in without giving my name.
Yeah, so I would like to have those clarified so people understand what you're talking about.
Okay, that's no problem. Can clarify that. Any other thoughts?
Steve, this is Jeremy. I don't know where we would want to say this, but we might want to be specific that when we're talking about Whois services, we're talking about the port 43 Whois service.
Okay.
That might just be something that we put above it.
So how would you rephrase this language? Let's do that, like, on the fly.
Probably just saying Whois port 43 service.
So Whois port... port 43 clients?
Yeah.
Whois port 43 clients must be able to accept a user query of domain name in either localized, what's the name for the localized version or the Puni code format?
And I'm just thinking that that might be important because of other implementations in the wild have different levels of definition for what they would think is Whois, either with flags or without flags, or so we just want to make it clear that it's not a different implementation that we're discussing.
Okay.
This is Aubrey. Can I ask?
Go ahead.
In terms of dealing with the U label and A label words, when you were rewording that, you actually put in localized and A label, and I forget whether you said the A or the S. I would actually recommend that, looking at this slide, that you continue to use the U label, A label, but maybe underneath your slide shot,
okay,
Educate people and sort of say U label is the label in the localized format. Give
right.
an example, you know, use your example there, showing the Chinese characters. A
right.
label is the ASCII compatible label, and then give your XN dash dash shot there, and that way it you get to use U label and A label throughout the slides, but it's clear to people.
Okay, so basically providing a definition at the beginning, and then, you know, use that consistently throughout.
That's what I would recommend.
Okay, fine. Any others? Any other thoughts on the requirement?
Yeah, one other requirement that seems to be implicit in a lot of what we're discussing is the port 43 compatibility, and there's no definition for what that means to this group.
And
I don't know, do you want to try to define that on the fly here, or whether you know, you want to try to put that into a sentence or two.
I am not certain I'm not certain what we have consensus on the compatibility on port 43. But perhaps we can discuss when we discuss the models, you know, because one of the models is provided compatible, backward compatible port 43 who is. Would that be good?
Yeah, so I guess I'm sort of lifting the cover on the fact that I don't agree with the fact that you can do this in a backward compatible, what I consider to be backward compatible fashion.
Oh.
And that's one.
Yeah, then for that point, definitely want to raise it at the discussion where we discuss the four models. Because there's
this is Julie. I should point out that this is what we're preparing here is not a consensus document. I mean, these are issues, as you've noted, that we're still discussing. What we're really trying to do is get more discussion around these approaches to say, well, you know, here's one way we could do it. You know, do we think it's feasible? And I think that's a fair question to ask about backwards compatibility. And the idea is to get some more discussion on these items in Brussels with a wider audience than we've had in this work group.
I guess my concern is that on this data we're looking at right here, it says that we have accepted backwards compatibility as a mantra here.
And I this is Julie. I think we probably don't want to characterize it that way at this point.
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
This is Jeremy. Bob, thanks for raising that. You know, personally, the technologist in me doesn't think that a backwards compatibility method is going to work with something like this. And ultimately, we want the application to be a bit more sensitive to it. And my desire for seeing who is port 43 service was try to tease that out in kind of a very subtle way. But you know, probably we should be a little bit more direct on a couple of the issues like that, which is, hey, is this is this a protocol type of issue, or is this a policy issue? Is this something that should get dealt with in RAAs, or should this get dealt with in RFCs? And that's kind of where the bridge is on a lot of these issues. So thanks for bringing that up.
Do we have consensus that port 43 backward compatibility is probably not going to occur?
This is Julie. I'm not sure we have consensus. I mean, there was an approach that Jim Galvin had suggested could be a technical approach. I don't think we've gone into a detailed discussion as to whether or not that or another approach would actually work or not work. But others can correct me if I'm wrong on that.
This is Omri. I haven't bought into a consensus that we don't need backward compatibility unless technology says it can't happen. But I don't think that's been investigated sufficiently.
Omri, I'm not sure if I heard that all, but... So
I don't buy into consensus that backward compatibility can be abandoned at this point. I think that is a technological consideration that, you know, we'll need further, IETF consultation on whether one can include any backward compatibility or not. And obviously anything is possible, but how difficult is it? And does the difficulty make it prohibitive is an answer we don't have.
Thank you, Aubrey. Others? Comments on that? I mean, in any case, I think that we need to, in this, make it clear in our slides that this is an open question and one that we, you know, are interested in seeing, you know, more discussion on.
This is Steve Metallitz. Could I ask a question here?
Go ahead, Steve.
Since this slide is, or this point is going to be, we're going to make it clear that we're talking about port 43.
Right.
Are we going to be saying anything about web-based WHOIS in our presentation?
Good question. My sense is web-based application does not suffer as much limitation as port 43. But I could be very wrong. So I guess
I think it certainly could be. You know, the registrar obviously may have more control over that, but. I guess there's two questions. First, if that's true, and I would defer to people that know what they're talking about on that question, and I'm not one of those, then we probably should say that. And second, this working group at some point probably should make some recommendations about how Whois in the web-based environment should be handled, even if the technological problems are not as severe.
This is Jeremy, and I apologize for getting your name wrong earlier, Steve. I don't think we've discussed web browsers at all. There's a couple of pieces of information that are a little bit better in the web HTTP world. Browsers will frequently include a language accept header. So for my browser being in the United States, I send EN-US, which says that I'm using the English language with the US variant. Web servers can do different things depending upon translations or different types of language scripts. So web applications definitely have a lot more visibility into the type. Oh, and also the encoding is pretty much not limited. You're not really worried about plain text and trying to worry about XML encoded data. You can pretty much rely on a browser that's HTTP 1.1 to pretty much accept any type of data. So there's definitely a lot more flexibility for display. Another consideration that that seems to come up a bit more is many registrars will run a Whois service on port 43 and will basically include a link to a web-based Whois service. And that's done for abuse reasons. It's done for one less interface. They're kind of right and maybe less right reasons for it. But maybe that would be a good separate topic to bring up is the presentation on both on port 43 services and also web-based interfaces. And actually, one last thing. I think in the RAA, only port 43 Whois services, and whenever I'm referring to port 43 Whois services, I think in the RAA there's some mention or there's some reference to some relevant RFCs. So that's usually the definition that it's defined. By, I don't think that there is a stipulation or requirement for web-based Whois information, but
there is in the RAA. There is.
Yeah, it's in the RAA.
So there must be a web-based interface.
Yes.
And that's in the previous to 2009 update.
It's always been. It's been since 2001.
Okay. All right.
So that would apply to the GTLD IDNs.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
So this is Julie. So, Jeremy, your suggestion was that we raise this issue sort of as a question or as a point of discussion in the presentation slides also? The requirement for web-based?
Is that what it is? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it would be good to include at least a couple discussion items of what, how should the web-based Whois interface with internationalized registration data. I mean, it's a little bit easier because there's a lot more known parameters that are in the environment, and you can rely on a web browser to display scripts and a little bit more efficiently or more reliably than the port 43 service.
Okay. So do we want to add a requirement? I see the working groups go maybe to stipulate a set of requirements, and then we may not have the enough technical depth to figure out the solution. So, but at least we can say what the requirement should be, and then, you know, somebody else that can figure out how to do that. So should I add a requirement on slide A, number 4, basically saying who is web clients should basically meet requirement 1 and 2.
This is Jeremy. I'm personally just looking at the slide deck. Yeah, I mean, that probably looks like a good spot for it, or just as a, you know, maybe just as a discussion point, or just to say, should similar requirements apply to web-based interface for Whois?
Sure. So I'll add a discussion, should similar requirements be applied to web? Okay, that's fine.
Thank you, Jeremy. Further discussion on slide 8? I'm sorry, was that someone speaking? Definitely not.
No.
Steve, do you
yep.
have what you need to proceed to the next?
I think so. So slide 9, the next question is, what do we require from internationalized registration data to accommodate users who want to submit and have registration data displayed in familiar characters from local scripts? And I think the working group decided to discuss this question, separate the different fields. So on slide 10, I list the set of the key fields from the RA section 3.3. So there are 1, 2, 3, 4. So there are 9 fields, and we can go over them quickly. So on slide 11,
Steve, this is Julie. This is just a formatting point, but perhaps instead of the picture, and I know you put these together quickly,
yeah.
maybe another screenshot. Go
yeah,
in.
Sure.
It's a lovely picture, I have to say, but
copy from
more
template.
Useful. Sorry. Please go ahead.
Go ahead. On slide 11, for the domain names, the requirement is Whois service should return both A label and U label representation for the given IDN domains queried, as well as the variant, and I provide an example. For that. But the example is the test.com, but it's in Chinese. And then, a user can submit the U-label test.com in Chinese and also the Punicode, the ASCII one. And then the Whois server will return both the A-label and the U-label as well as the variant. Is that a requirement we want to call out? Yes, no?
Sabri seems like yes.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello, Jiankang, go ahead.
I think for this, there as well as the variant, maybe the label has variants, not only variant.
Okay. So how do you...
test.com, maybe in Chinese, both the simple and traditional Chinese, and maybe other variants.
Like what?
Also has other variants. I think you should then the word variant should be variant.
Oh, okay. Oh, variant. Can you provide any other variants for those two names so I can add it on them?
Tsinghua University, there are maybe more than four variants.
Okay, then can you provide me with an example? Just
oh, okay. I will
name and a variant.
I will email you.
I can make the screenshot.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, moving on. Anything else besides on slide 11? Okay, on slide 12, domain names. As I said, we have not discussed about it. Suggested approaches are welcome. Right now, everything is still in U.S. ASCII, and I don't know whether the working group wanted to stay that way. Thoughts? Hello? I might get disconnected.
No, you're not disconnected.
No, you're still here. This is Jeremy. I just think that, I guess this one hasn't, there's really no strong opinion. Maybe the community will have some input that the working group can consider.
Okay.
This is Aubrey. If I have an opinion at all, yes, it has to be listed once there are,
I'm sorry, it has to be what?
This is Aubrey. I think once there are internationalized server names,
mm-hmm.
then, yeah, they kind of have to be listed in their international variants. So I would think that, yeah, this one follows from just about everything else, but maybe I'm wrong.
All right. I'm wondering whether there isn't an alternate way for us to display U-label, A-label combinations all the time side by side so that we have both representations, example in here in the main server area.
Yeah, we could.
I'm wondering whether the IETF should specify that when you have internationalized domain names, they should be represented visually this way. I don't know. Just a thought.
The IDNA guideline only specifies the domain name. It does not specify anything else. So the domain name is, A label, U label, side by side. But for the rest, it's really up to us to decide.
Steve, this is Julia. Well, I think that's maybe the suggestion here. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that maybe the suggestion could be that name server. The recommendation would be name server names also could be displayed in U label and A label side by side.
Yeah. Okay. But
these are all just points of discussion. So
yeah, points of discussion. Yes.
Right. It's important for us to get feedback, particularly in the public session, for people to say yes, that's a good idea or crazy or whatever. But so I think we can put it out there for discussion.
Sure. Okay. Add that. Name servers should also be displayed in A label and U label side by side.
Was that Bob? Was that you that made that suggestion?
I think it's
Bob. Yeah. Did I capture that correctly? Because I'm not sure always if I get these technical things right.
I think that's would be helpful if people had an idea of what we're talking about. I totally agree with Avi's opinion that once you head down this road, everything has to be capable of being internationalized. Okay, so we have to. That's a requirement of what this group is trying to do. Okay.
All right. I think I suggest in Brussels for that presentation, we have some representative from registrars and registries. We want to hear their thoughts and socialize these with them. These could become very significant changes for their operation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so slide 13, the registrar, the sponsoring registrar, I think he was discussed and agreed earlier that we should keep the sponsoring registrar's name in ASCII to aid investigation purpose of law enforcement, and I think Avery has a comment here.
Yeah, it's my it's understanding my knee-jerk reaction, although basically I'm taking it to a meta level. Let's list people reasons other than just law enforcement. Obviously, there's consumer protection agencies that may want this and whatever, but I think it's a good suggestion, you know, that the registrar should be there, but let's not single it out to just law enforcement, so
sure.
Those of us with a knee-jerk reaction don't have to avoid it.
So I add, for the purpose of law enforcement and intellectual protection agencies?
Actually, Steve, I'm not even sure if you have to say, I mean, I think there could be many people, myself included, who would be interested in knowing who the sponsoring registrar was, and it might, in making a list, and Avery, correct me here if you disagree, but I'm concerned in making a list, we're saying, well, these are just the entities who would care about this information.
I
think others, you know, even your average users might have a reason to be interested in this information and be able to use it.
Should we just take out, just say, make available in ASCII?
Yeah, you can. This is Avery again. Actually, and if you added the intellectual property one and didn't add consumer, you would, for example, have both of my legs knee-jerk.
And both.
This is Jeremy. I was going to remind about the consumer interest, too, for finding out the owner of a business.
And so you might want to say that, you know, to aid, you know, whatever, and give examples, but make it, you know, a not limited to, or you may just want to, if you want to give a reason, to aid users, consumer agencies, law enforcement, intellectual property, you know, et cetera. So to give a long list, or follow Julie's thing and just say, you know, it makes sense for it to be there. But
sure.
Either one's fine.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you could even just say make available an ASCII to aid in identification of the sponsoring registrar. I mean, for anybody who wants that information, because it could be anyone. But, you know, you could then say, for example, you know, consumer, whatever, consumer entities, law enforcement, et cetera, you know, something like
okay.
that.
So I put those entities in the below as kind of talking points.
I don't even know if they need to be talking. You should give them as examples, but not as, you know, an exhausted set of examples, but, you know, just, you know, an ad, et cetera, you know, just so people know that we're not deliberately leaving someone out of
right.
the list.
Well, by the way, Julie, who will present this?
Well, that's a good question. You know, staff certainly can. I know you're unfortunately not going to be able to be in Brussels. Dave will be there, but Jeremy or Edmund, I don't know your availability, but you would certainly be welcome to present this or join in the presentation if you wished. It's you know, entirely whatever you feel comfortable with.
Yes. I think it would be better for the co-chairs to present.
Well, if
Aubrey,
I agree. Well, Edmund and Jeremy, are you both going to be in Brussels?
I will be in Brussels. It's Edmund.
And this is Jeremy. I'll be in Brussels as well.
Would you like to jointly present, or would you prefer staff present? We can do whatever you would prefer.
I'd be up for it.
And Edmund, just so you know, we tried to schedule this so it didn't conflict with any council activities.
Cool. Thanks for doing that. And, it'll be great if Jeremy did it. I think I did one last time, so.
Well, Jeremy. Yeah, if you could do it, and of course, staff will be there. Dave and I will be there in person, and I think Steve will be there, you know, in teleconference. So we will be there to assist, of course.
Yep. Okay. I'll make sure that I'll double my effort on the slides to polish them and make them. But
We'll have you send out another version for everyone to review.
But I want to ask the members: is this the approach, the right approach, like specify the requirement and then provide an example? Is that the right thing to do, or are you, you know? I mean, I don't know. I just make this just mark up the screenshot. I'm not sure if that's what the working group wants.
This is Jeremy. I think that the examples are going to be extremely helpful because, you know, we've been talking about A labels and U labels a bit, and unless people see them, I think that they'll walk out not being able to provide good feedback. So I think having examples like that would be great. Maybe doing one with a web interface as well would be helpful for just one of them, and then for the rest of them, you could just use the Whois slides that you've created.
Okay.
This is Julie. I should note we're at 5 minutes after the hour. This is a very useful discussion. Would people like to consider going through the slides and staying on the call? I don't know if you have conflicts. Alternatively, we could schedule a follow-up call instead of in 2 weeks, which would put us in Brussels, but for next Monday to finalize discussion, perhaps at the same time. What do our chairs think?
I can go for a little bit longer. I don't know how much more time are we looking at?
10 minutes?
Yeah, I can do 10 more minutes.
I can
then proceed through and get as far as we can. I think that will help us to be able to do some drafts here, a good draft slide. Go ahead, Steve.
So slide 14.
Let's go back to 13. 13, I think that you need to include the fact that the sponsoring registrar could also be represented in international characters as well, or not. In other words, it's not ASCII only or English only for the registrar. Wouldn't you also encourage the international, whatever native language that registrar is accustomed to working in? In other words, you should have dual representation here. Is that not correct?
This is Steve Metallis. Is that maybe it's a question whether ICANN is going to be doing that in the accreditation process. I mean, when they accredit Registrar X, are they standardizing some type of representation in another script?
That's a very good question. So the proposal is, should we also internationalize it, like, you know, provide ASCII and as well as the international as well as in their local languages?
This is Aubrey. I think both is reasonable and good for the local users. You know, the ASCII may not be all that usable, whereas the local is, and internationally, obviously, we need the ASCII. So,
bingo. Yeah. So I just didn't want to imply one only here. So.
Right.
Now that may have, this is Aubrey again, that may have RAA implications that would have to be noted somewhere in saying, hey, you got to collect it if you have an accredited local registrar. That seems to be, common sense, but whether the RAA says that or not, I don't know, Steve, you've been reading it more intensely than I have, and I don't know if it does or not. But
I mean, I don't think it does now. Maybe we could say something like, you know, what's make available in ASCII and to the extent consistent with the registrar accreditation process also in the local script. Something like that, because I just don't know what the plan is. I don't know whether, for example, you'd have to submit, if you were a registrar using another script, you'd have to submit to ICANN all this information in the other script, or just how it would work.
Yeah. Okay. So I add that. We haven't discussed this. I mean, I think in previous discussion we agreed on ASCII, but we have not, you know, discussed about making it available in local languages. But I put it in there anyway.
Yeah, this is Julie. I think it's important to include for the purpose of the discussion.
Yeah.
For the public session.
Yeah. Just. Okay. So Any more on slide 13? Okay, slide 14. So the telephone number is apply the UPU standard using international notation. So actually the phone number and the fax number in this example conforms to that. Okay. Any comments on 14?
Would this also be, this is Steve Metalich, would this also be applicable when we get to the telephone fax numbers of all the contacts?
Yes, yes. Okay. This is all the, this is kind of a magic category, like all the phone numbers and fax numbers.
Right.
Slide 15, the date. Yeah, what do we want?
My comment about this was you should provide some examples of the different formats, but what confused me or made me unclear about your comment about internationalizing dates is I didn't know whether you were talking about internationalizing calendars as well. We have used the Gregorian calendar. I don't know, and I'm not an international person to know whether some societies use entirely different calendars, and
right.
They would be offended if we said you have to use a Gregorian calendar. I don't know. So maybe somebody on the call does.
What? I'm not sure either. I'm just, you know, throwing out the question.
Other societies certainly use other calendars, but I wonder if they would ever, any other societies would use it for this type of purpose. I mean,
yeah. This is Aubrey. Every society I know that uses another calendar also uses, and I can't name off the top of my head what standard is used to disambiguate dates because there are the people that do the month day and then there are people that do the day month. But I expect that somewhere in UN or, you know, IATA for the airline or for something, there is a standardized format for date expression.
Yeah. I mean, the EPP also specified that the UTC format, right? The EPP protocol.
That's probably good enough.
Yeah, we could use that. That's also
probably good enough.
Okay. Then cite whatever standard we're referencing here and let it go at that, I guess, at this point.
Okay.
Right, so that would be, this is Julie, that would be the UTC EPP standard,
yeah.
You said, Steve?
Yeah, for the
and,
right,
and of course, it's referring to a particular standard. And
right, and I think we have to be very clear, Steve, when we do these, that we put in the full reference because people, and avoid using acronyms for these things because, well, myself included, I don't know necessarily what these things stand for, and I'm sure our audience, many members may not as well.
Okay, I can put it in there. Any more thoughts on 15?
This is Jeremy. I'm going to drop off now, but I'll certainly follow up with some comments on the list. Great job on the slides, and really enjoyed the discussion, everyone.
Thanks so much, Jeremy, for your help, and we'll be sure to send out a summary set of notes, and we'll revise the slides, of course.
Okay.
Great. Thanks. Talk to you guys later.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Slide 16, registration status. So, you know, we thought a few options. You know, leave it in ASCII 7, always publish the exact EPP status code, and leave it to the clients to decide whether to localize it or not. Identify a more easily understood representation, or publish the easily understood representation in mandatory and local character sets. Those are some of the options that, you know, we think of. We mean, you know, Dave and I. clarify that.
Let me ask
you. Yeah,
go ahead. I'm sorry. Someone else.
I think this is fine as long as it's noted that no consensus or no discussion has been had on this. We need some work here.
Right. So this is Julie. So if I understand correctly, then we would just list the possible approaches and leave that up for a point of discussion in the present in the public session.
Sure.
This is Avery. I agree also. The only thing I might change is considering it just ORs, because we tend to understand the OR that is the exclusive OR as opposed to the inclusive OR. And I know when I looked at it, I said, oh, 2 and 4 are a lovely combo. Hmm. So we may want the inclusive OR an AND OR.
Oh.
Sorry, I shouldn't be using logical terms like inclusive ORs and exclusive ORs. At least I didn't say it in Latin.
Okay.
But an AND OR. Or just list the, you know, just list the choices and say pick any two, pick any one, whatever, but just not start it off as a exclusive set.
Right. We could say, list these and then say, or any, you know, and any possible combinations, you know, of the above or something like that, to indicate that it could be, as you said, 2 and 4, you know, or someone else might like 1 and 3. But we don't want to say leave it in ASCII or 2 or 3 because it could be a combination. Is that what you're suggesting, Aubrey?
Yeah, as I said, you can look at this list and say giving the EPP code is a really good idea, but also giving it in either the mandatory language or mandatory and local, you know, is a good idea. So leave the discussion open.
Okay. Good. Slide 17. Here is where I have the most difficulty. I'm not sure what's the best way to present all these models.
Steve, if I make a suggestion, this is Julie.
Go ahead.
You might want to break this out into several slides.
Okay. And then for each model, provide a screenshot?
I think that would be helpful, but I'd be guided by what the other work group members think.
This is Steve Metallis. Yeah, I think something like that would be helpful. And since we already talked about, you know, some of this has already been dealt with in the earlier slides, if you're talking about some of the contact information. So this is this slide is titled Entity Names, but it also applies to postal address and
right.
Some other things that we haven't did. I guess
this is mostly postal address. Yes.
Yeah, I would think so. Entity name and postal address.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think if you could, it will be very helpful to provide examples.
Okay, I can do that. Now, provide examples. Do we want to add a kind of a comparison, you know?
This is Julie. I don't know if we want to. Maybe if we just provide each model with an example, we could get some discussion around each one. But what do the work group members think? Would a comparison be better? I'm not sure. If we want to make, I know we did the matrix before, but that gets fairly complicated for some who may not be a technical audience, and it might be hard to present. Any thoughts?
I'm fine with trying it with 4 slides, or you know, I think the suggestions you made are good. Let's revise it and have a discussion either on the email list or that's good.
Right. Thanks. So we could start as 4 slides, you know, 1 for each model and with an example for each, and we'll see how that looks when we get the next draft out.
Sure.
Right.
Okay.
When will we see the next draft?
I can finish that today, and I think it will be helpful that Julie can take a pass with editing the languages and make sure they are the most appropriate, phrased.
If you send me a draft and then I'll try to turn it around quickly. Let's say for the work group's purposes, we'll try to get you something tomorrow.
Okay. And then probably we want to comment on the email list. Like instead of editing the slides, it's probably just put your comment for each slide on the list itself, so that we can we have a record there.
I think that would be helpful. We'll certainly ask work group members to comment to the list and to be specific as to which slides they're referencing.
And then maybe by next Monday we'll have a phone call again to just go over and finalize them.
Edmund, are you still on the call? Do you think we should try to have a call next Monday at the same time, perhaps?
Yeah, I'm sorry. And sure. It's I personally won't be able to attend that meeting, but I guess that's fine.
Or would it be better if we switch to the alternate time?
The 3 o'clock. Yeah.
The alternate time would probably be better, but that week we're having an IGF Asia meeting here in Hong Kong, and I'll be pretty tied up
week.
So
why don't we ask if work group members who might be able to attend a call, and if it looks like enough people would be able to attend a call, at what would be our rotating time, the alternate time, then we can decide if we want to set up a call, or otherwise we can just do the discussion on the list.
Julie, when is the deadline we have to put the slide in?
When they're ready. Sooner
okay.
is better, but we need to make sure we're happy with them as well. So we'll try to move quickly, but I think we need the work group members to have at least a week to discuss them.
Sure.
We need to have them posted before the meeting. Let's put it down.
Yeah. That's next Sunday? Next Sunday?
No. Well, the council meeting, the council meeting would be that Sunday, whatever day that is. Sunday the
20th.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Sunday the 20th. So sometime before that day.
Oh, yeah. So we are... time crunch.
Week. So, but we're very close. And thank you, everyone here. I don't want to keep everyone longer, but was there, I'm sorry, Steve, was there another slide after this? No.
Okay. No.
All right, so great. We'll work on getting revised slides out to you tomorrow and for discussion on the list and possibly a call next Monday, depending on work group member availability. And thank you, everyone, so much for your helpful input and for staying longer on the call. We really do appreciate it. Anything else anyone wants to mention before we sign off?
No. Thanks, Steve. This was a big help, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Thanks.
Thank you, everyone. And if we don't speak on a next call, I hope to see many of you in Brussels.
Okay. Good travel.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.